Welcome to Be Nice or Leave. I'm your host, Polly Hammond. In a world where businesses are facing new challenges and heightened competition, empathy is becoming an increasingly important tool to better understand your customers, improve communication, and ultimately lead to increased profits. Through interviews with business leaders and experts, this series explores the ways in which empathy can help organizations overcome these challenges to be better and to do better. Most importantly, we'll hear from the people who have made it happen and can see the positive impact it has had on their organization. So whether you're a business leader, an entrepreneur, or simply someone interested in the intersection of empathy and business, Be Nice or Leave is the podcast for you. In today's episode, we're delighted to have a truly inspiring guest joining us. I'm so pleased to have her here. Karine Luna Ostaseski. Did I get that right?
You did. That is so rare. Thank you.
Ostaseski. I practiced that so many times before the podcast.
Yay. Nice work.
Karine is the founder of Sia Scotch Whiskey and one of the first Hispanic entrepreneurs to create a Scotch whiskey brand, which is why I have her here with me today. Her journey as a first generation Cuban American has challenged conventions and inspired many others to achieve the unexpected. Today, we'll delve into her story, learn about the importance of empathy in her leadership and business journey, and discover how she's committed to paying it forward by supporting the next generation of diverse entrepreneurs. So grab a cup of coffee or perhaps a glass of Sia Scotch Whiskey and join us as we uncover Karine's secrets to success. Let's get into it. Karine, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was saying to you before we hit record that I read about you in one of the many drinks publications out there. And I was like, wow, this is an awesome story because, you know, you say in your bio, breaking down conventions, but actually the story really does go that way. Tell us all about Sia, kind of set the stage for everyone.
Yeah. So Sia is, I like to say Sia is an unexpected blend. Everything you'd never expect from a Scotch whiskey, everything from the founder, right? If you think you're going to meet the founder of a Scotch whiskey brand, you're probably expecting, you know, an older Scottish man with a beautiful thick accent
and a good beard.
In the industry, you know, has for generations, right? But instead you've got me, a Cuban American woman living in California who wasn't from the industry and just kind of clawed her way in. You know, you would think that I came from a lot of money. In fact, I'm a child of immigrants and I was a graphic designer. I didn't have a lot of money when I started the brand. So Sia was actually kickstarted, crowdfunded into existence from people all over the world that wanted to buy a bottle before a drop had hit US soil. You would think, you know, does this have any kind of pedigree to it? Is it good? and in fact, we've received 96 points from the Ultimate Spirits Challenge, double gold medals, Whiskey Advocate magazine rated us as their highest blend in 2015. And we were actually number 4 on Rolling Stone's most recommended whiskey list this year.
Nice.
Let's see what else. You would think, you know, can I drink it neat? What does it taste like? In fact, it's very approachable. And it makes a fantastic cocktail. I like to challenge conventions again. So everything, if you could just kind of put your mind here, if you try Sia Scotch whiskey in a mojito, in a daiquiri, in an espresso martini, in an old fashioned, it's just fantastic, extremely versatile. And to wrap it up, we've got an amazing give back towards minority entrepreneurs to help support people like me, to help give them a leg up.
That's so great. Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the podcast. We're done. Let's go.
Let's go drink some whiskey.
There we go. We're out. So you mentioned it that prior to starting Sia Scotch Whiskey, you did have a successful career in marketing, in design. Obviously, that is, you know, I've talked to, for instance, Rowena Kerr-Lewis, who is the founder of Denomination, about the notion that design is really just an expression of empathy, right? Like we have to really know who our audience is in order to get marketing and design right. Do you feel like, or how do you feel like that background gave you an unfair advantage or a leg up when you're starting a brand from scratch?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful question. I was fortunate. I would say maybe about maybe 20 years ago, I went through a program called Landmark, and one of the conversations, and I still have a, you know, Landmark coach that I talk to. And one of the conversations is about enrolling conversations, right? And putting yourself in somebody's point of view. And when you're having an enrolling conversation, the thing that you have to think about is, well, what's in it for me? Or from their perspective, they're thinking, what's in this for me? And so, you know, to empathy, just that kind of encapsulates, you know, how you want to view the perspective from someone else. And that might be your end customer. It might be the retail manager or store manager that you're pitching to. You know, it might be the people that you do business with. And really just to kind of put yourself in their perspective, like, how will this help me, right? And so the designer part is actually kind of interesting. I think that there's a distinction between art and design, and design in some ways it needs to be usable, right? And so with when it came to creating SIA, I did so many focus groups and really just kind of testing what brands people like, what they don't like, and why. I did a lot of Scotch whiskey tasting events and really getting a sense for how do I convince more people to join this category that I love so much. And what I learned was that 80% of the taste experience is actually the nose. So if you smell too much smoke or peat on that whiskey, you might decide, it might be too strong for me. And so what I realized was I wanted very inviting notes of, you know, caramels and vanillas to really kind of bring more people into the category. And then same thing with the design. You know, I wanted to make sure it stood out on the shelves. This wasn't going to be a typical scotch, right? So the bottle couldn't look like every other bottle, and, you know, the name couldn't be like every other name. And then, you know, I went to bars and restaurants and stores before I even started. I said, what's important to you in the shape of a bottle, in, you know, the way that you use this product? And so that's a lot of that thinking went into the design of the bottle.
I think we could talk about that for an hour. Yeah. So I know that you live in Napa, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's
okay.
Right.
So everybody knows that my day job is in wine, right? And one of the things, of course, that we struggle with is that wine, more than spirits, tends to be very much about the maker, producer. What do I want to make? What do I feel is about this? And we really struggle to get a lot of wine brands to look at it from a, you know, what I would describe as a market-driven approach. Whereas, you know, you don't tend to have that problem as much in spirits. And it sounds like, especially when you're dealing with approachability and the crowdfunding, that you took a very market-driven approach to developing SIA. Would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah. I think there's two parts to that for sure. I think with what's great about a blended scotch in particular is that you can achieve that consistency from batch to batch, whereas with the single malt, it might vary depending on so many factors. And so I was very fortunate to work with some master blenders, you know, when I gave them, you know, this is our perspective. And then they took it and created, they matched it with spirits of their own. And I got to work with the master blenders for Johnny Walker, Old Parr, and Buchanan's. And I was literally shaking when I got into that room. The other side of that is the crowdfunding. You know, I think you being a marketer, you understand sometimes for me as a creative director for 17 years, I was so used to telling other people what to do and my vision, right? And so it was very hard for me to get on the other side of the camera for the first time ever and be literally filmed. And I was shaking and nervous. And I thought, you know, what do I have to offer? You know, how do I say this when the camera's turned to yourself? And that was really a struggle for me for many months there. And then when the campaign went live, it was this amazing validation that yes, in fact, people were ready for something new and different. And it was beyond just my own circle of friends and family that came out to support, but, you know, strangers from literally all over the world that were asking, hey, where can I buy a bottle of SIA?
And what were they saying to you that they loved about it? What was resonating and bringing them to you and to the crowdfunding and to the brand?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to kind of speak for them, but a lot was around, you know, this is new, this is different, this is a fresh perspective. You know, it's, you know, Hispanic woman making scotch. So, you know, just kind of offering maybe even a new audience. So that's, I think, part of it. And then I think the flavor profile, you know, when I described it, people really, they got what I was trying to do.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of change that idea, that notion, that stereotype that some people have that, you know, that scotch is smoky or that it's too strong or too expensive. And so I wanted to definitely break those barriers down.
So one of the things that we always talk about when we're, because we talk to business leaders primarily on the podcast, is this notion of it takes years to look like, you know, you succeeded overnight. And there's so much hard work and there's so much resilience that goes into it. I mean, were there those moments that you were just like, fuck it, I'm out, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I'm too tired. I've not slept. Where's the money coming from? It's all so hard.
I've got a few of those. I think the first is just starting out. And I remember this number in particular because I got rejected 80 times when I was trying to create the actual spirit. And, you know, I'd written to every distillery, every, you know, blender, every, contract blender I could find that I had, you know, visited, met or read about and, you know, rejected 80 times over the course of, you know, a couple of years there. And each time it's like a checkpoint, like how badly do I want this? And so you just kind of keep trekking, right? And then the 81st person finally said yes. And it was actually a set of sisters, out of Florida, Lauren and Gabby Shane, from Spirit Imports. And they said, you know, our dad runs a Scotch importing business and we've been wanting to bring a younger demographic into the category as well. And we have connections and know how we can help you. And so kind of off to the races there. So it was just absolutely wonderful. They ended up becoming not only partners into the brand, but really good friends. And I consider them family. And wow. Then when it came time to fundraising, it kind of happened again. Well, now let me backtrack. When it came to finding a name, that was also another time where I was like, one of those moments where you're just ready to throw in the towel because, you know, you go through. I think I had a harder time finding a name for my brand than I did for my child.
Well, kids' names aren't trademarked, so yeah, no one's exactly. going to sue you for using the same exactly. name.
Bingo. Yeah. And so, you know, you think you have one, you're like, oh, somebody's already got that one in this category. And then you do the world searches and you want to make sure it works everywhere. And then, so that took a while and it was kind of ironic because the fifth name that I tried to trademark was not taken. And I threw in the towel for a little bit there. And then I picked up the Scottish Gaelic dictionary and I went word for word and I found Sia and it means number six. And I thought, well, this is meant to be because not only is it my favorite number, but there's also six whiskeys in the blend and it was the sixth name. So it worked out well. And later on, a friend pointed out to me that the SIA could stand for Scotch is awesome.
Yeah, the thing about naming is funny to me because obviously I can't do it with client brands, but there are a few of our own products that after all of these years of naming, I just look at it, I'm like, screw it. I don't care. Pick something. And we're just going to go with, like, it's so it becomes like buying a house. Like, you know, the first house that you go in, you're like, oh, this is the perfect house. And by the 10th house that you're trying to buy, the developers are outbidding you. You're like, I don't care. Does it have a bathroom? Fine. You know, try to buy it. And in some ways, breaking down some of that emotional connection to it is just so liberating. So yes, I totally get you on that. So in the context of all those years that you're dealing with this and you're dealing with the rejection, how do you actually stay strong? Like, do you have, you know, are you the kind of person that you wake up at 4 a.m. and you make your green juice and you walk the dogs? Are you more like the, you know, the 9:30 pulling the covers over your head and reading a book?
I mean, I have 3 kids. Okay. Like, shower every day. Oh, gosh. It's delightful. No, I think it's really hard because at the time when I, you know, was coming up with this, I was working a full-time job and that wasn't enough, right? So I needed to work a second job doing freelance design work and, you know, websites so that I can pay for, you know, all of these lawyers and, you know, parts and pieces to make this come together.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, working on the actual business. So there was a time there where I felt like I was working 3 jobs. And when the business finally launched and I had bottles on the shelf, I was still working my day job for 2 more years after that. And it got to the point where I felt like, you know what, I'm doing both of these a disservice and I'm not doing either of these well. And I tell people it's kind of like when you're dating 2 people at the same time, like there comes a point where you just have to pick one and go full force. Right. And so that's what I finally did. But it's hard. I am not someone who is extremely regimented, but I am very determined and some might say stubborn. But I think that's helped me in my life to just kind of keep, you know, trudging along on something and working it until I find that success. And like you said, it's not overnight. You know, it might appear to somebody that it looks like, wow, this came out of nowhere, when in fact it took, you know, almost 2 decades in the making.
I know. Yeah. And I find it so interesting because I've got 2 kids as well. And I know that, you know, not everybody chooses the parenthood path, and that my experience isn't the same as everyone else's. But I certainly know that having mouths to feed is a very good motivator to, you know, put in the hours, put in the work, and just keep going on that. So mad respect to you for doing that. I want to talk about the work that you're doing with your fund, because that's not mm-hmm. just money, but that's also a lot of mentoring. So can you just tell us a little bit about the Entrepreneurial Spirit Fund that you launched years ago now? How many years ago was that?
Yeah, so I guess the seeds were planted from the very get-go. So I realized very early on that a lot of people took my calls, they gave me advice and support. And so it's really important for me to kind of pay it forward. And so in that spirit, the first year, I said, you know, I'd like to give whatever I could to an organization that helps underrepresented entrepreneurs. And that year, it was a women's entrepreneurs group in San Francisco, and all I could afford to give was $100. And then the second year grew a little bit more. It was like $200 to a different charity. And then through the years, it grew and grew. And then we partnered with an amazing company, Diageo, and they were able to help support this program that I had started. And they, with their help, we started what's called the Entrepreneurial Spirit Fund by Sia Scotch. And it's a grant program that combines grants, not only, you know, $10,000 grants, but also I provide personal mentorship. So I'm really proud to say that last year we launched the program with $250,000
wow.
to kick it off. So we were able to help 25 small business owners that identify as minorities or underrepresented women, LGBTQI plus, anyone that really needs the support to help them, you know, grow and thrive in their business. And then last year, we kind of switched it up a little bit, and we decided to focus on food and beverage and hospitality businesses to kind of help this community that was, you know, disproportionately impacted with COVID. And it's just been an honor to be able to not only help with, you know, you think like, what do I have to give? But you realize I've learned a lot, and I've built connections and resources and advice. And beyond that, I can also now begin to pair them and build community within these groups. So it's like, okay, well, you both have food trucks, or you both have consumer packaged good products, or, you know, you both live in the same city, you should get together for lunch. So it's just been wonderful to see this magic starting to come together as a result of it.
So you had 25 recipients. How many mm-hmm. applicants did you have?
Oh, wow. The first year, I think we had 6,000 applicants. Last year, we had 10,000 applicants and chose 11.
Wow.
This year, we haven't launched the program yet, but it just shows that there's such a need and such a demand. So I my kind of North Star with Sia is to keep growing the business so that I can continue to give back.
Well, that's incredible. Do you mind telling us sort of maybe not all the criteria, but how do you distill, since we're play on words today, how do you distill, you know, 10,000 applicants or 6,000 applicants or any number of thousands of applicants down to 25 recipients?
Yeah. It was quite a challenge. Thankfully, there was a committee of us that were, that, you know, we each, you know, got, I think it was maybe 1,000 that we went through. A lot of the recipients and the applicants were tailored down by just a data analysis. You know, are they in the right city? Are they over legal drinking age? Do they meet the criteria that we set up for the business applications? And then we went through, there were essays that said, you know, how does your business help support your community? That's a big one for me. Is making sure that your business has an impact. And that could be in ways, you know, great or small, right? as long as you're helping to either, you know, support another cause or maybe helping, you know, people that are underserved in your community through your business.
So that notion of being purposeful or purpose led, of course, has become quite popular. You know, back when you started, I don't think that there was probably as much of a focus on both, you know, the diversity issues, because that has certainly come to a fore in the past 5 years, as well as being purpose-led businesses. And I think it's something that a lot of business leaders struggle. So what I see, I don't know if you see this as well, are some business leaders who are literally like trying to latch on to every possibility to show that they're doing something, or they're maybe trying to find what's the thing right now that's popular. Or I get a lot of questions about, well, what if I pick something and it's important to me, but doesn't have anything to do with, you know, my industry, my community. And the example for that has come up a couple of times, I'll just say, are companies who support issues around domestic violence. And they're like, well, this is important to me, but I find it really, really hard to message that. What's your advice for people about selecting their pathway, communicating their pathway, and recommendations?
Yeah, I think it needs to be something that it's burning a fire in your belly. That's a cause that you really, truly believe in. We get a lot of requests, you know, for different causes all the time. And I'm really clear when I respond. I say, you know, we're very much aligned towards supporting underrepresented entrepreneurs. And, you know, it's sad sometimes that you have to turn some things down, but it's also, I say that, similar to business, the analogy is a bonsai tree, right? Like there's only so much water and resources for this plant. So you have to keep trimming in order for it to thrive. And so you can't be all things to all people, and it has to be genuine because people can really see through it if it's not. And for me, I really walk the walk and talk the talk. Besides the grant, I also volunteer my time for other accelerators and other entrepreneurs. Every email or phone call that I get, I respond to as someone that just needs some advice or support. And that's beyond the grant. And so it's because I believe that if you support this, you know, minority entrepreneur, this underrepresented entrepreneur, that when their business grows, they'll hire people that look like them, that had the same journey as them, and then give back to their own communities. So I know that it's not the grand scale of support that some companies can do, but this is how I choose to spend my time, because I truly believe in it. And I think that that's the best way, is for the founder or the business as a whole to really have that same mentality.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now what's going to happen is everybody's going to be like, ooh, we're going to email her. And we're going to be like, we're going to ask the questions. So when in the process of mentoring, what are the questions that you're hearing most? You know, like if we have a microphone and we have a platform and we want to help anyone get over the hump, you know, what are the questions that we need to be asking and answering for them?
Oh, wow. I mean, it varies, I think, depending on the stage of the business, on, you know, where people are. If they're just starting out, you know, a lot of questions of, you know, incorporating or having a business partner.
So basic business.
Yeah.
Knowledge.
Yeah. I think, you know, funding and fundraising, grants, should I get investors? Should I, you know, take out a loan? Should I, you know, give up equity? Like, you know, those are very common at all stages of the business, right? If someone's working, when is the right time to quit my job? If, you know, they're trying to pitch that first big account, how do I go after them? If that account's in danger, how do I keep them? I mean, I hear everything, and they all resonate. And what's so interesting is that it's not unique to the business. These are just general business issues, right? It doesn't matter if you're running a bakery or, you know, if you have like a SaaS software business, you know, people are struggling with the same issues.
And you have to go out to people who've experienced it, right? To get the best advice. You're not going to get that through ChatGPT. It's not going to tell you how to get a diverse board.
I'm so curious. I kind of want to try it and see what happens. But I completely agree with you. I think that people need to be, vulnerability is so important. And, you know, just Asking for what you want is another one that I think is important. And it's important also to have that community of people. It might be a friend network, but I think having an entrepreneurial community is really important. I'm part of a group called the Women's Cocktail Collective. We are 35 female founders of spirit brands. So just, you know, no husband wife teams. This is just women at it alone. And we collaborate. We don't compete. We find ways where our products can be used together. If there's an opportunity that doesn't work for one, we pass it along to another. If you have questions about a distributor or, you know, a process, we have a great, very active Slack channel where we communicate, and we have a space to be vulnerable and ask those questions that sometimes, you know, you might not want to publicly, because you might want to appear as if you know it all, right? But the reality is none of us do. We're all figuring it out. And so I think, and thankfully that there's a lot of resources out there, but finding people who have already done it and finding that community or creating one is a good thing to do.
Yeah. And, at the risk of picking on women's organizations, mm-hmm. I find that you also need the community of people who have either experienced where you are in business or are where you are in business, and not organizations where you're trying to sell to one another. And unfortunately, I think that that's a lot of times what we see in some of the community groups, is it becomes much more about selling than about support. I'm just going to tell, you know, a story for parenting days. I remember this so much. So I'm an expat many times over at this point. And I remember having my children in a far off land from home with absolutely no family support. I'd never had little siblings. And I get into this prenatal group, and all I wanted was for someone to help me understand how to do some things. Like, I've got this little child that I gave birth to, but I have no experience. And I just remember all of the other women were like posturing, like the woman who's made all the different brownies for everyone and the house is perfect. And I'm like, wow, I'm lucky to get out of bed in the morning, and I'm pretty shattered. And that for me was the moment that I realized that I had to open up with honestly what I was finding challenging. And I had to find a peer group of people who, A, were not going to mock me for it. They weren't going to try to leverage that against me, but they also were not going to look down on me for the things that I didn't know how to do. And, you know, those are my little prized people, are the ones that I can go to them and be like, I screwed up, or I don't know what to do, or I need help. And then they can come to us with the same thing. And it's just so, so vital.
Yeah. Sorry. Something came up for me as you were telling your story about kind of opening up your narrative and what comes out for that. And it brought me back to there was a story that I didn't used to share about Sia, and like how I started the brand, and that the inspiration had actually come out of a breakup. And I was going through this breakup, and I thought, you know, I'm unhappy. Like, you start to kind of redefine, like, well, who am I without this person? And what's my identity without this person? And then, you know, it came to realize, like, you know, I'm also unhappy with my job. You know, what's my legacy? I'm leaving behind this world where I just, you know, work so that other people can stare at their screens longer or their phones longer. And what I love about whiskey is that it's this like connecting spirit, that you sit down with someone and you go slow and you have a moment and you really share that time, and that these whiskey makers are putting product into barrels to age for future generations, and that's their legacy. So I wanted this connection to be my legacy. And for a long time, I didn't talk about the breakup part because I was ashamed of it. And then when I started opening up about it, it was amazing how many people began coming out of the woodwork and resonating with that, saying, you know, I went through that too. And I understand. And, you know, almost like this, this experience that we were able to have together. And so, yeah, when you were saying about that, you know, I'm surrounded also, I think in mom world, especially, I don't know if it's just heightened, but there's a lot of these like Pinterest moms, right? Where everything is perfect and dialed. And, you know, as I said, I'm like, I'm struggling with my three and trying to, you know, to do it all at the same time. And so, I quickly exited from some of those groups because I felt like I was either being, you know, sold to, or that, like you said, there was just a little too much posturing. So I wanted to be able to find that kind of safe space, if you will.
And also, I think that something that I can say that it's taught me is that I've learned to be very open about what I don't know, what I get wrong. I mean, I do it with clients. Clients will ask me a question. I'll be like, don't have a clue. Gonna have to go look that one up. I don't know. Maybe so that is age. I don't know. But yeah, let's chat GPT. Yeah, that's right. But that feeling that like, I think it's just recognizing that anything that I'm feeling, whether another person will vocalize it or not, we've all had that moment where I don't know, or I've made a mistake, or I'm exhausted. And actually, I feel like pandemic probably helped a lot of us be better about communicating that. So
yeah,
that was an awesome thing.
Like facade and let's get real with each other.
Yes, yeah. All the Zooming. So SIA initiatives. So how do you take a brand that you know you've put all this work, you've got these beautiful products. What are the next steps?
So right now, the next steps are growth. We went from 2 states to 14 states in the last year and a half. And so just basically nurturing those markets and growing them. So it's involving a lot of travel and a lot of really fun marketing initiatives for me that I hadn't gotten to do before now that we have more distribution. And then eventually I hope that we could go nationwide and maybe make our way internationally so I can reach you in Barcelona.
So you said back at the very beginning, and I love the fact that you said it, that one of the things we have to consider, you know, when we're walking a mile in someone else's shoes is that it's not always the consumer. Sometimes it is our distribution and our trade partners. And that's something that you focused on, like right down to bottle design and all of that. How have you actually balanced that out? How do you communicate and know what your trade partners need?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, the messaging with my brand, thankfully, it's not that different, right? The end goal is just introducing more of a younger, new demographic to the category of Scotch whiskey. The customer might be someone who is drinking brown spirits or American rye, bourbons. They just haven't quite made their way to Scotch yet, and they don't really know where to start. And so SIA is a great introductory Scotch. And so that same presentation is something that the distributor or salesperson can use when they're telling, hey, you know, you have all these people coming in and they're looking either for a gift or something new, and this is the product that you can use to introduce them to the spirit.
And that then, is, you know, the same very thing clever. That is very, well, because so it's filling a need for them. Super smart.
Yeah. So we're talking about empathy, right? So it's important to be like, okay, well, if I put myself in your perspective, what would help your business? You know, would it be more customers? And not only starting with SIA, but maybe they start with SIA and then they're introduced to this whole category of Scotch. And then they come back and they're like, well, what else do you have? And so really just kind of putting them in that perspective. And then, yeah, the same thing, I think, for, you know, for the distributor or the people that are helping to sell your product or service, you know, what are the tools that they need to get their job done? And where are they struggling with, and checking in, like, what kind of, you know, hesitations or, you know, challenges are you getting in the market? And then here's how I've solved for that in the past. And then, yeah, I would say the same thing for a bar, restaurant, you know, what's
but
important.
But how do you
them?
Know that? Like, this has gone way more on the alcohol marketing side than the Be Nice or Leave side. So everybody forgive me on this. But yeah, how do you know that? Because I hear from a lot of brands that they don't get as much communication from their distributors as they would like. And they don't get communication from the front line. So think about the people, the bartenders, right, who are pouring, who are getting that consumer response. And it doesn't like carry back up the ladder to you. So how do you create an environment where all of that information flows back to you for your own marketing comms and R&D?
I'm in it. I am working the market personally myself. And so I'm getting that first like wince when someone says, no, I don't like that. Or, oh, this is delicious. And I see those moments and I hear people the way they describe it. Or I'm there, you know, making a cocktail with them together. And so I say, oh, that really worked. I never thought to make a SIA mojito. And so I'll take that back to the distributor. So I think it's just, it's important to just be, you know, in the weeds with your business too. I had someone I was mentoring that he had success in other businesses, and he started this other business, and he said, you know, oh, well, I have someone running that. And I said, well, you know, he said some of the challenges in it. And I said, well, you know, have you like spent a day there? And he's like, no, someone else is running it. And I was like, well, if you don't know what the challenges are, I invite you to just go spend the day, work the counter, you know, be in the kitchen, open the shop, close the shop, and you'll come up with new processes, new systems. You'll see the pain points in the business. And then we can have another conversation about, you know, what's working, what's not working. But if you're not in it, how do you know?
Wow. I love that. I need you to come on the 5-4s podcast so that we can actually talk about marketing alcohol. So you've got growth, you're expanding your distribution, you want to get some Sia over here to Spain. So any of my Europeans who are listening, come on, let's help make that happen. Can you tell us a little bit about the best place to find some Sia in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a wonderful map on siascotchwhiskey.com that shows all of the locations that carry Sia, stores, bars, and restaurants, as well as online retail partners where you can have it shipped. I think Drizzly's on there too. If you don't want to wait the whole shipping time, you can have it couriered to your place. And then on Instagram, we're Sia Scotch Whiskey.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I could keep you on for another hour, but we've hit our time. Oh my heavens, we were just getting into the good stuff.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much, Karin, for joining me today and for sharing your incredible journey as a first-generation Cuban-American woman entrepreneur in the world of Scotch whiskey.
If you're interested in learning more about how empathy can transform your business for good, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And if you have any questions or feedback, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me online at 5forest.com or on social media at 5forest. I'll add the links to the description. See you next time.